I'm Milo Dennison.
And I'm Kev Bamboo, and this is Rip It Up.
Rip It Up is a topical show about life impacting creators around the world today.
Yeah, and on tonight's show, we're joined by financial literacy advocate Marvin D from Paper Street Projects. We'll be discussing the topic of facing racism, how digital assets can enhance, and more. Once again, hello to those viewing on our unedited stream on Instagram Live. But before we get into the show, Milo, you're going to be starring as Buttons, aren't you, in an adults-only production of Cinderella. Is that correct?
Well, first, I just want to say, I don't get why everybody rips on Buttons like he's a bad character. He's like in almost the whole play. He has more dialogue, I think, than anybody else. But no, I am not starring as Buttons. As you can see by this handsome, rugged jawline, I will be playing Prince Charming.
Oh, yeah, naturally, yeah. So when's the show?
It will be opening at the end of March, the Wednesday, whatever the last Wednesday in March is. And it will be at the Criminy. They're going to be so mad that I can't remember the name of the theater.
Look at that. He doesn't even know when he's performing and two, where it's at. So I don't know. I don't have to believe you now.
Yeah. Yeah. End of March. At the guys. Yeah, I'm looking it up actually.
Brilliant. I love that.
So it's at the Brookside Theater and it will be opening March 30th.
Excellent. Well, good luck to you. Break a leg and all that.
All right, let's stop talking about that nonsense and welcome our guest to tonight's show. So thanks for joining us, Marvin.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with simply tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you into crypto.
Okay, so I am from New York and not much to say. I've been in sales, you know, most of my life. So I've been always a people person. And I just kind of know how to connect with people, you know, and try to, you know, if they don't understand a certain topic or just need questions, I kind of would just like to, I'm really good at breaking things down and break it down in layman's term where they can understand it. And I just have a knack for that. And I have a knack for, you know, reading people and helping people. So that's where the, you know, financial literacy, comes into play and just helping everyone. And how I got started into crypto specifically, it was about, 2017, a friend of mine who I worked with, he says, "Have you heard of Bitcoin?" I'm like, "No, I haven't heard of Bitcoin." I thought it was a video game initially, because you hear the word bit and it's just like, okay, it's like a video game, Bitcoin. He goes, no, all you got to do is, you put your money in and it goes up. And it just, to me, it just sounded really, irrational. I couldn't compute that. He goes, "Yeah, you throw $100 in and you'll just make a lot of money." And it was just like, okay, well, that doesn't sound right or true.
That sounds a little too good to be true almost.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, it was coming from a friend of mine who I like to think he's a pretty rational person too. I mean, he's in sales. So, for him to tell me that, I was like, okay, well, let's try it out. This wasn't like towards the beginning of 2017. So, I didn't put much in, right? And I mean, cause I was a little skeptical and it had a little bit of a run towards the end of the year. And then, that's when kind of everything just kind of started pumping, right? Everybody gets all euphoric and stuff like that. So that's how I kind of got introduced to, crypto assets and going down the proverbial rabbit hole of crypto and the banking system and the financial system and stuff like that.
And did you find kind of at that stage, your life kind of changed a little bit, as in the dynamic of your life probably changed a little bit because you invested in cryptocurrency?
100%. Right. Yeah. It definitely changed my whole perspective on things, especially the concept of money. It kind of changed everything for me. And from then on, I couldn't thank him enough. My friend who up until now has just kind of fell off the game, I guess. He wasn't really, because numbers, number didn't go up anymore for him. Right. So that's just everybody else. There's a couple of tourists and then I just kind of stayed. But yeah, that was like the pivotal point for me in terms of financial literacy and stuff like that. Just trying to learn more.
So obviously, you see, got into crypto, as many people know that have ever kind of like dipped their toes into it, can be quite a hostile place, as well as quite a friendly place amongst different communities on right. there. So did you kind of, and especially some of the larger ones as well, the really big, not really companies, but really big communities that are all, you know, all out there and incredibly kind of like maxing out on whatever they're supporting. Do you find that kind of more people showed some of their true colors as like the political landscape changed as well?
I feel like they do. I feel like they have. I noticed that, you know, certain crypto enthusiasts had, you know, they were aligned with certain parties, you know, and, you know, when their party is not, you know, no longer in, you know, in behind the oval chair, I guess they get a little upset and kind of, you know, they're just not enthusiastic anymore because they thought certain things were going to happen, or, you know, certain events that would lead up to an explosion in crypto. You know, that's where the greed factor comes in. You know, and then there's people who are on the other side who were just, you know, they were more of, how would you say, you know, just, you know, kind of just like putting it in their face, right? That, you know, the other side wasn't really, you know, the other side lost or whatever. So I do see a little bit of that. And, you know, it's a shame, right? It's just a shame to have that kind of divisiveness when we all share the same common goal, and that's for financial, you know, freedom. You know, just being more in tune with, you know, the system, right? So, and I myself am a registered independent. So I just kind of stay away from the left or right, because when it comes down to it, you know, no one's going to grab you by the hand and walk you to financial freedom, right? Nobody's going to say, oh, okay, you know, let's take care of this. Let's take care of them, because they're feeling the brunt of the irresponsible financial and monetary policies that they've been passing for the past 2 years. So, yeah, that was a long-winded answer, but yes.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how pretty much everything is divisive in some way. Like, there is literally nothing that people will not argue about. So it's crazy. Right. And something like this, you're like, well, everybody wants to actually make money. Nobody wants to like not have any. So it's kind of like, so here's another method. Here's the new way of doing it. And some people are like, what? I don't understand. That's terrible.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right. I suppose it can be quite an intimidating, you know, anything new to anyone, unless you're really young and, you know, got no fears at all. You kind of, everything's a little bit intimidating to people. And obviously something like a new type of currency or a new way of using currency as well can be, I know people like in the UK, excuse me, they changed their currency system in like the mid 70s. And of course they'd had that same system since, you know, they were putting stones into a wall, you know, kind of thing. And so, you know, just a natural exchange of this for this. And they changed up the whole currency system, and it went from the kind of decimal to imperial, or imperial to decimal, that's the way. And so many people, even today, still say, like people like my parents' age, they still say, yeah, I don't know why they messed around with it. It should have gone back to the like 126 and a half P that was worth a pound. And it's like, no, because it was done to simplify, you know, that, and round the system that was more in line with the rest of the world. But yeah, it's still people, I suppose people don't like change that much, I imagine. Yeah. And especially if they're incredibly settled into certain ways that they don't think there's anything wrong with. So talking of that, if we bring that kind of to present day, when you kind of start getting more involved in like cryptocurrency and digital assets, obviously there was, you know, Twitter's quite a big place for crypto in terms of discussing things, or at least one of the initial gateways into talking about that. But wasn't there kind of like a lot of weird stuff going off? Like you'd get people creating like kind of like these like long-term like memes that just became almost like a cult figure and things like that.
Yeah, the Well, yeah, the cults. Yeah, it's almost like a religion. It feels like with the current with their currency of choice, their own little small community. You're asking maybe for like an example of that, or like have I seen like on crypto Twitter? I call it crypto Twitter. It's really.
Yeah, I suppose I was thinking more. I saw something that was like kind of like this. It was just literally like a meme that went around all the time in one of the communities. And I think it was a bear. and then all these people were just kind of like, it was full of, supposedly so anyway, it was full of all these riddles and things.
Right.
Essentially, I don't know. If you know more about that, then tell us more about that. It's just interesting in the whole, it's kind of like not cult as such, but kind of following something and blindly almost believe in certain things.
Yeah, that's the bearable guy. That was the original Riddler for the XRP community. It was interesting, right? His first, his first riddle, I think, which got mainstream, I guess, was the castle one, where it was a pretty. It was just a regular castle with a bear and a jester's mask and, a hand coming out, which looked like it was holding like a little puppet and, a king with no mouth. That was like one of the first ones. And, that entity that was behind that riddle was saying that, a certain coin would hit $589 by the end of the year. And that created such a frenzy with certain, crypto holders, both for the community itself for that specific crypto, and then for people outside who just couldn't believe it, in the end, it kind of created this like hysteria of this coin of XRP, and I never really believed it. It just to go something from $1 to $589, that just sounded silly. But there were a lot of people that who were really adamant about that, and within the end of the year, it would hit that number. And I could see why it seems like a cult. I can see why there's so many XRP names that were created around that belief that it would hit a certain price target, and it kind of hurt a lot of people in the end, but that's the name of the game, unfortunately, is you just have to do your own research.
Do you think that's a scenario of somebody trying to influence the price? Like, he has a bunch, wants to cause a quick little run on it, get it to jump up, and then sell it all. I mean, in the same way that if Elon Musk tweets about a coin, right, it's suddenly, the whole Dogecoin thing from last year or whatever, mm-hmm, and he's talking about it, it just went through the roof. Like, is this potentially somebody trying to do that as well?
It can feel like that. It definitely feels that way. His there were so many people decoding the riddles and like connecting it to like geopolitics from that one simple photo, that it's possible that it could have been a malicious actor behind that. But honestly, if it wasn't for that specific. The way the way that entity kind of put things together and kind of wrote everything in code, and the way it was being decoded little by little, you could see how BRICS was involved. There was obviously the Federal Reserve, who was like, there was just like all these symbolisms behind that one riddle. So it's possible that he could have been a malicious actor just trying to build liquidity for, exit liquidity. But I never really saw it that way. I kind of just saw it as someone just having fun with, and just kind of putting things together. And then behind the scenes, you were seeing, the de-dollarization of Russia, and China. That's being more prominent now. That's popping up more now. But that was a thing. That was a work in progress for years already. So, the CBDCs, right? The central bank digital currencies. Like, we kind of got all that from that one small riddle. And for me, the price point wasn't it wasn't like the driving force for me behind buying it or, purchasing or investing in it. It was really the idea of, this could really be something big that, all these, the US dollar wouldn't be used more as a weapon, rather than a global reserve currency. So yeah, it's very interesting. And I don't come from a background of finance like that.
No, I just picked up on a part that you said in this. So are you saying that this meme essentially that came up was actually hidden with like almost cryptographic kind of parts to it as well, that people were kind of like disseminating as well? That was,
yeah,
that genuinely was hidden within it.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds wild, but that,
yeah, it seems a lot of effort. That's what I mean. Like, even if it was just for some fun, it seemed like a lot of effort to really kind of whatever message they were trying to get across.
And I found it entertaining. Like, I just found it entertaining. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, I started with Bitcoin and Ethereum first, and then, like, you know, I appreciate, you know, that aspect of a community, just having fun, someone just having fun, whether it be malicious or benevolent, we won't know, right? Just like the same situation with Satoshi, right? We don't really know he she is, right?
Maybe the Bitcoin founder that is
the Satoshi Nakamoto. Yeah, you know, we don't really know the true intentions of what this technology brings. I mean, especially bringing an asset that has a $1 trillion market cap for free, right? I mean, that's pretty impactful, right? And that certain countries are adopting it as a currency. So, you know, to do all that for free, and it took, you know, about 12, 13 years, you know, I can see the merit behind this bearable guy, this character. So I just thought it was kind of fun. You know, I just thought it was cool and just something just to kind of keep yourself busy while, you know, prices are low and boring.
Along that subject, Kev and I are on the creative aspect of the spectrum. And so let's talk about a little bit about how that crypto market has become a part of the digital asset and the birth of the NFTs. Explain this little phenomenon to us.
Awesome. Yeah. So NFTs, I think it's a pretty interesting concept.
So what do they stand for anyone that's viewing that's never heard of
NFTs? Non-fungible tokens. So what it is, it's pretty much what they're saying is that, you know, how Bitcoin, you can't differentiate between another Bitcoin because there's no identifier. With non-fungible, it's just pretty much each token is identified with its own characteristics or traits. So there is some kind of difference between, and fungible meaning, I guess, exchanging between two parties. And the reason why I think that's really important, it's really important because the blockchain, it's powered by blockchain, right? So what that is pretty much just a database, and it just keeps track of transactions that happens on a ledger, right? Sort of like how you have an accounting ledger, there's debits and credits. So if I send you an NFT, it credits your account and debits my account, the NFT. So that's double entry accounting, which was, you know, created hundreds of years ago. This is a new phenomenon, which is just triple ledger accounting, right? There's a debit and credit for both parties. And then there's a third ledger that everyone can see. Right. So it's verified by not only two parties, but it can also be verified by an outside party that has nothing to do with the transaction. So it's triple ledger accounting. And the reason why that's important and how it can really sort of push NFT into mainstream, especially for artists, is that they're able to share their art on one specific platform that can be seen globally. Right? It can reach out to all 7.2 billion people on Earth, right? On this beautiful Earth. It can reach out. It doesn't specifically, you know, because there's artists here in New York that'll probably just reach out to the major cities, or, you know, LA, Miami, you know, what have you. But here still in the US, would maybe, you know, some Europe and stuff. But now, you know, they're able to kind of broadcast their art to people in Africa, to people in, you know, in the UK, like all, you know, anyone who has access to a mobile phone. And I think that's pretty, you know, that's impactful because, you know, that has that, you know, that, you know, that cliche term, you know, starving artist, right? Or hungry artist. Like this would actually help, you know, eliminate that kind of that cliche, because you can literally sell your art to anyone in the world, and you know, you can add benefits to incentivize people to hold your NFT or even to hold your art, You know, in so many ways, I think it's just really good. I think it's really, cause I wasn't really into art. I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't really like, you know, before this, but then I see some of these artists coming up with these very intricate drawings and stuff. And I'm just like, wow, you know, this is pretty interesting. I mean, just to hold and just to have, I think it's pretty cool, you know, instead of the right click saving, like just physically, well, digitally owning the NFT.
I think as well, what's interesting is because a lot of time, especially specifically like the art world and anything that's quite kind of has its own niche anyway, is quite difficult to get into or, you know, within certain circles and all about accessibility, if you must, because for a lot of people like myself, I'd never even dream of getting, you know, kind of getting picked up kind of like a gallery or something, or, you know, a proper bespoke gallery. Like New York is massive for art. There's tons of galleries, you know, same as like London and Milan and all those places. But it's a very kind of, you know, core knit, you know, community of people, and you only really get in there if you happen to either just know somebody or you even if you try really hard to push in, you kind of, your work will get disregarded because it's not, you know, it's not this guy, you know, it's not a, or you're not dead and you've not been collecting the works for, you know, the last 20 years or something. So It's interesting with crypto, because I really, or well, with NFTs, because I really enjoy the fact that it's you've got these two worlds that are actually quite, you know, quite different. You know, you're digital assets. And I know people create digital drawings and things like that, but when we're talking about, you know, physical goods as well, is, you know, photography, you know, actual paintings and things like that, the worlds were initially so far apart. And so now you've kind of like bringing together all these people across, you know, a massive creative spectrum in any part, you know, not just photographers and, you know, not people just creating images, in anything, you know, Milo could, you know, could be acting and create an NFT and it's like filled with like all his best, you know, best clips that are unique to that buyer, you know? So it's like, and that is, like you said, the possibilities in that seem absolutely endless as far as your mind can think. So I suppose it just means it's an easier way of getting people, obviously, more accessibility, more exposure, especially like say in creative fields, the difficult industries to kind of survive and to be successful in, even if you're really good. So,
and for example, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but also the fact that you're able to program the NFT itself to kind of collect royalties on the secondary market.
I mean, that's amazing. Like a sell on fee, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you know, if I were to buy a photograph from you, you know, that's just a one-time thing, let's say before NFTs. Let's say I decided to sell it, you know, for 5x the price. Well, you know, all that goes to the seller, to the second on the secondary market. It doesn't go to you at all, right? So you just make off from that first time sale. You know, with the NFTs, you know, you could set a 5%, 7% royalty, and through every sale on the secondary market, you're going to benefit from that and gain a passive income. You know, as price of it goes up, right? You're going to make, you'll get paid accordingly through each sale. And I think that's amazing. I think that's something that, you know, a lot of artists would appreciate.
That does bring it in, because that is nice, like you say, because you'd only probably get, if you had like a pre-written agreement with a gallery or something, you might get one sell-on or something. But then after that, the next buyer is like, no, I'm not doing any, you know, not doing any sell-ons or anything like that. It's literally, that's it. But yeah, to bring it back around then. So obviously, if you were to buy one of my NFT photography pieces, so how would a creative person essentially, especially someone who knows nothing about NFTs, how would they get involved with the whole process and actually creating one? So I know you touched on kind of like programming an NFT in. So
yeah. Yes. Well, to get started, you know, get yourself involved in on Twitter. I know that sounds kind of silly, but honestly, Twitter is like my go-to. I call it, you know, it's crypto Twitter, that's what it's called, or NFT Twitter. You know, get yourself out there and start following other artists and kind of try to, I mean, because the thing is, so artists would love to support other artists, right? So it doesn't cost much. You don't have to necessarily buy their art to show support, but you can retweet, like, comment, tag a couple of friends that you know that's on Twitter, just to kind of help show that, you know, hey, you know, that's, we're here to support you. And then, you know, hopefully that's reciprocated. Now, I'm not saying you should do that on purpose, but it shows that you know, artists really, truly are, you know, there to help each other. So get yourself involved in Twitter. We know following these artists. Second would be getting involved in their Discord channels. I mean, I know there's a lot of Discord channels out there, but if you're able to kind of reach out to these artists, you can, you know, personally talk to them one-on-one through the chat, but also, you know, you can even collaborate. So if it's not your first time, you know, if it's, let's just say you're an up and coming artist or you're a well-known artist locally, you know, you can say, hey, listen, you know, this is my work. This is my portfolio. I would love to collaborate with you. And then maybe, you know, hopefully sometime in the future, you know, we can set something up where we can combine them together. I think that's really awesome, because with that, not only are you getting your name out there, but of course you're getting the full backing of someone who's well known, or someone who, you know, who has a small community that, you know, your community will be able to be combined with that community. So now you're just going to have one big community. It's all about community, really. It's all about the members and actually bringing them together. So you have crypto Twitter, Discord for your sources of information. I think also meetups.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what about like, right, kind of networking, yeah, with like people in person or on Zoom and such like.
100%. And meetups. I'm sure there's local meetups everywhere in every city. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to just get your face, your name out there, and then, you know, possibly bring, you know, your portfolio. I mean, pictures of it. You could bring pictures of it and show them through your phone and just kind of link up, because through there you can meet developers. You're going to be able to meet programmers, coders. I mean, the sky's the limit when it comes to kind of getting your name out there, but also getting started into NFTs. You know, and there's platforms like OpenSea, there's LooksRare, Nifty Gateway. I think on these platforms, you know, you can actually mint them. It allows you to mint NFTs right on their platform as well. So there's many different ways
that doesn't involve any programming knowledge. It's just literally you kind of list it on there essentially.
Right, exactly. So for someone who's just starting, you can start out that route, right? And then again, get your face out there, network, because I mean, that's what blockchain is really all about. It's all about network activity and participants in the network, which brings the value, you know, it raises the value of the protocol, the network. And that is going to allow you to, you know, just get your feet wet and just get started. I mean, you know, I feel like the NFT space is definitely a lot friendlier than the crypto. And it's not because, you know, NFTs, I don't know. It's just, it's weird. It's a little wild because with crypto, you know, with the crypto, there's a lot of, you know, enthusiasts for certain coins, right? And they're just closing off their community. And that's right, not really what it's about. It's about having an open community. And the NFT space, they understand that. They're just a little bit more pragmatic, right? Rather than being idealistic in their approach to this space. So yeah, those are like good examples to get into, and just kind of, you'll never know who you're going to meet. That's what's great about these meetups. You'll never know.
Do you think there's something for name recognition? Because when I read about it, you see a lot of the big selling stuff is by celebrities and that kind of stuff. So what about that person? You talked about it being global. So somebody that lives in South Africa that has no name recognition, like, what's their chances of competing against the guy that did that digital monkey guy? I can't remember the one with the actual name.
Yeah, the Bored Apes.
The Bored Apes stuff. Yeah, exactly.
What's great about this space is that, you know, there is no barrier to entry, but also, you know, everybody starts off at the same starting line, right? Everyone has to start off somewhere. So the rate of success all depends on how much you're willing to kind of, I guess, put your name out there. I mean, you know, it all depends on how much are you're promoting yourself, right? Promoting your work. You know, what I would say is it's not any different than you physically trying to put your work out there locally, but on the main stage where everyone has access to these platforms, it just makes it easier. It would make it a little easier in terms of having that kind of success. you know, I understand that celebrities buy these apes and stuff like that. But the thing is, to be honest, they don't know any different, right? They're just buying whatever the hype is, right? And that kind of that, in my opinion, that does kind of ruin the space a little bit, because now you're picking winners, right? Through people's eyes that are not involved in this space. And everybody starts rushing, you know, all the liquidity rushes to Bored Apes, or all the liquidity rushes to Punks, which, again, I'm not going to discount that from the project. I think it's a great project. But there's other projects out there that have, you know, a real solid team, great artists, and a strong community. So, you know, it's just the fact that celebrities get involved, and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody's like, oh, okay, I want that. I mean, we've seen plenty of derivatives of apes. I mean, how many times you've seen apes in different kind of like costumes and stuff like that. So, you know, it all depends on the effort that you put in to try to get your name out there. And it's a lot, I feel like it's a lot easier than it is, you know, if you were trying to promote it in a physical setting rather than the metaverse.
Yeah. So it's not quite a get rich quick scheme that like, oh, I just need to create something, throw it on there, and suddenly people will spend a ton of money for it. It does need to be something worth that people will want. And you do need to actually sell yourself along with it. Like, I'm buying something because this person has contributed to creating it.
Right. Right. And, you know, they call it a cash grab, you know, the thing is with artists, right, you know, some people would approach the space who are not really savvy into the space. They would just see it as, okay, I just need money, or I just want it and I'll just cash out and then I'll just sell it and that's it, which is fine. But if you need money, well, you know, go to a platform that just, you don't need crypto, right? You could just go to a platform that you're able to sell, or maybe like a GoFundMe. Because I'm going to be honest, I was on Clubhouse the other day and I heard an artist, she said she needed money. And she's like, to be quite honest, I just want to sell it just so I can fund my college. Noble cause. I think that's awesome. If you need that, you know, there are other platforms, because the thing is, there's going to be a lot of people, especially in the NFT space, that are going to be not expecting a little bit more, but they're going to want you to kind of keep the liquidity in the network, in the community, rather than you taking it and then cashing it out and then, you know, paying for whatever. So there's certain, I guess, rules to this, you know, to this whole aspect. But I personally feel, you know, 90% of NFT projects are going to go to zero because we have too much speculation in the space. And the real ones, you know, the real true artists with, you know, a strong following, they're going to be the most successful ones. So it's going to be really hard now, but as projects start, you know, quote unquote, failing or falling off, that's an actual artist's time to shine during the, you know, quote unquote, bear market of NFTs. So right now, you know, a lot of artists, well-known and very, you know, talented artists, they will be overlooked for now until everything starts kind of, you know, starts slowing down, or, you know, the euphoria stage starts kind of dying down.
Yeah. I kind of see all that. It's like, like you say, there'll be certain people who are actually, you know, very talented in the field, but they'll get missed just because, like, right. Say, sometimes, like you say, these factions of communities that come from celebrities just, you know, having the pure purchasing power and doing it for a fad, or, you know, they're people of influence, whether they're famous as a celebrity or business person or whatever. But talking of kind of like bringing communities together in the kind of right way as well, I'm going to kind of ramp us onto our kind of like, our like kind of main topic, where we do a public survey, and we have, you know, people come and put comments in. So we always do this near enough every show. We put out a question to the public and bring it to them, and also we'll all talk about it as well. So with this, and obviously because talking about communities and divisions and splits, and there's a similar link there. So this becomes a little bit more of a serious question that I think everyone can kind of relate to. But it's the main question we put out to the people was, do you think there's been more or less racism since Black Lives Matters? And what I'm going to do, I'm just going to bring up some of those comments from the public, because we've had a good chunk. Let me just But yeah, the initial question to them was, do you think there's been more or less racism since Black Lives Matter? And we give them kind of like a multiple choice of definitely more, definitely less, a little more, a little less, no change, and other. And then we invited them to also comment upon their choices as well. And just for the record, so most of the people that are taking part, we had a good 60 people kind of put in on there. So obviously it's not a huge model for the rest of the world to go by. But in terms of, you know, just this discussion, there's a good chunk of people that have put in. And most of them, I mean, I was a little surprised by this personally, because it wouldn't have been my choice. There was a good 48% said no change. And then we had a mix across the board then of other opinions on there. There was a good kind of 20-ish% of the definitely more, sorry, 31% of definitely more and a little more. And then no one said a little less. And then some said about 5% said definitely less. And the rest was made up of the others. But yeah, then the main one in there was most people opted for no change. And then what I'll do, before I bring it back to you guys, I'm just going to read a couple of those comments that people kind of clarified on their reasoning for. So we had, and these are all anonymous, so it's just, right. And what I will make clear before I read any comments on this survey and any the other comments to the questions is, anything that's said there isn't necessarily my opinion. It's just what someone else has literally put. It's a public survey. We give them the freedom to speak if they want to be. Sometimes some people are silly. Most people are pretty sensible. But we won't get through all of the comments, but I'll reel some of them off. So first person said, I feel in some parts things may have improved, but in other areas there seems to be some form of regression via a backlash of sorts. Collectively as a world, I couldn't say for certain because I haven't had racism happen to myself. It would be best to ask people who it has happened to, regardless of their skin colour or race. And then we've got, so someone said the white, in brackets, was the white reaction to it all was all lives matter. Yes, they do, but it's missing the point that Black people are not safe with the police who have institutional racism running through them, both here and in the US. Somebody else put, very hard to quantify, so I have to fit no change by default. I'm going to run a little bit further down because there's quite a few there. Someone else put, Black Lives Matter has done more harm than good, but I don't know if they mean that in a positive sense or a negative sense, if that makes
right.
So I don't know if they're saying it on the, like they agree with Black Lives Matter, but it's done more harm, or they don't and it's done more harm. So they've not expanded there. Someone said it seems to have helped raise awareness for some, but then incited others for some strange reason. So that kind of seems a little bit leading on from the other one, with a bit more clarification on what that meant. Someone said, no matter how many protests or movements, etc., racism is embedded in your race. Prejudice has and always will exist. It's tribal. An interesting take. Not one I'd necessarily agree with, but this one's quite a long one, and I'll do this one and one more. I speak for the UK only, and I fear it has been quite successfully incorporated into culture wars by right-wingers who wish to perpetuate the status quo. Example, unequal opportunities for racial minorities or persons of colour and others. This is done by directing the resentments of neglected white sections of society towards other minorities. For example, EU migrants taking resources and lowering wages rather than swelling available tax revenues. And another example was ethnic minorities receiving special treatment at their expense. And then the example given there is that leads to people then saying things like White Lives Matter too, in inverted commas. So I'll do one more and then I'm going to bring it back to us guys. And the last person on there said, I'm not sure whether whether it has, to be honest. What I do think has happened is Black Lives Matter has been used by both sides of our inept political system and their associated reactionaries. So, yeah, I'm going to bring that back. Some interesting and varied comments there. I'm going to bring that back to you, Marvin. And, yeah, do you think there has been more or less racism since Black Lives Matter movement? It's quite hard to say.
I kind of would have to agree with the, you know, almost the no change. Because me personally, you know, it's just the fact that there's no change. I'm not sure if that's I don't want to go over if that's a right or wrong answer, but I can probably come to an explanation as to why. Because me, I would feel that, you know, it's just made a little bit more aware with people's actions. You know, some people, you know, there was a time, you know, years ago, you know, 20, 30 years ago that, you know, people would, I guess you could say people would say, you know, certain things and there would be almost no backlash or there would be minimal backlash, right? Not to say that's right or wrong. I mean, that's what it is. It's that people were experiencing different environment 30, 40 years ago. Now, you know, whether that's acceptable or not, of course, that's never acceptable. I just want to make that clear. It's just at that time, people weren't making it that much of a social. They weren't making it not want to say social issue, but they weren't putting it out or being blasted on stage as they're doing now, which I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, if you want to prevent something, right, if you want to kind of make a change, you would want to kind of make it known whenever someone makes a mistake. I mean, there's no problem with that. You know, if you see someone in the street, you know, and there's a crowd there and, you know, someone decides to say a certain word or two, you know, it wouldn't hurt to say, hey, listen, you know, that's probably not the right thing to say, right? That's probably, you know, that's as much as you can go forward without being physical or taking any kind of, you know, physical act, because then you'd be wrong. But if there's more or less racism after the, you know, after the BLM or during the BLM, I would say it's just not as prominent anymore. I mean, you know, it's kind of sad that we have to say things like this. We have to ask these questions because it shouldn't even exist, right? Something like this shouldn't exist. You know, moving forward, I think since the awareness is there and people are being held accountable, I think accountability is really important, right? To kind of make sure people are kind of set and you know, set to a certain standard, right, where everyone can live, you know, in a more, you know, peaceful environment without having to face some kind of divisive attitude towards each other. So more or less no change, I would say, but definitely more aware, and that's going to, moving forward, that would help. It just takes, you know, it just takes small steps. So hopefully, you know, I mean, I think millennial and Gen Zs, I think we're kind of past that, to be honest with you. I think we're kind of, because, you know, we are products of our environment, right? So, you know, 30, 40 years ago, certain generations got away with it or whatever, what have you. That kind of trickled down to the later generations. And I think the generation before the millennials, they were a little bit more understanding because they were facing that kind of, you know, segregation and prejudice right before us. So I guess, you know, it's just, they instill their values in us. So hopefully, you know, the majority, they've taken the acceptance of, you know, the approach of being more open and more amicable towards people who are different than you. I don't see us having that kind of issue, you know, maybe 20, 30 years down the line, once all these, once after Gen Zs, they're just being more accepted, right? They're being more acceptable for who they are, what they are, race, color, religion, you know, preferences, what have you. And that's just going to make it, I don't know, that should be a little bit more, it should make more impact, just keeping that awareness and accountability. So accountability is big for me, you know, in any kind of aspect in life. If you're going to keep getting away with certain things, you know, nobody's going to say it to you. You know, it's just, you're just going to keep doing it, right? So yeah, that's my opinion.
But yeah, I'll kind of pass it over to you, Milo, but I agree, there's parts of it that are kind of, as further generations come down the line, it should change. But there will be like, there's that lingering generational issue that's being passed down to people as well. But yeah, sorry, Milo.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's hard for me to know for sure as this handsome white face is shown.
So-called Prince Charming.
Exactly, hence Prince Charming. Jokes aside though, I kind of in the boat as well. I don't think a lot has changed with the BLM music movement, especially when you see certain states trying to pass laws about like not teaching critical race theory and that type of stuff. So that's that, you know, we're not racist, but we don't want to talk about racism or teach racism or acknowledge that it ever existed. Well, okay. Ignoring it doesn't make it go away, kind of a thing. So it probably has brought it more to the front of people's thoughts. But the thing is, yeah, it's if a person's a racist one day, the odds on them waking up the next day and suddenly not being a racist are pretty thin. You know, maybe they have some magical conversation that happens that changes their mind, or they meet somebody that changes their mind. But the reality is, yeah, it's generational. It's going to take a lot of time. So exactly kind of what you were saying is that our generation isn't really going to have that much of an impact, but that next generation and that next generation. And it's true, right? You look 30, 40 years ago, we would have never elected a Barack Obama president. And, you know, you look at celebrities, our hugest money-making celebrities are Will Smith and, you know, people like that. So change is happening and it happens slowly over time. Now, yeah, it's only been, you know, a couple of years since the whole hashtag BLM movement, but I think it will change. I assume it will. When I see younger generations, I think they're a lot more open-minded than my generation or before me. I think when I was in school, when I was in like high school or grade school, like you called somebody gay as a joke, right? You made, even if they weren't or were, that was like an insult. Oh, you fag, you know, this kind of stuff. You know, now you would never do that. Now it's perfectly okay to walk down the hallways of your high school, you know, being, you know, gay, lesbian, whatever, and you're not insulted for it. So all of these progressive changes do happen. They just happen slowly. And I think this is one of them. I think it's just a slow progression to a better world, hopefully. Anyways, yeah, hopefully.
It's good that you touched on that, about obviously, like when you at school, because obviously when you're at school, they're very, you know, you're very of influence, you know, you're highly influenced by the other things that your peers do and things like that, which obviously can sometimes lead to a spiral, but it's usually, you know, it's usually in the kind of playful sense initially without realizing the impacts of what's being said. Like they say, often they say, oh, you know, kids can say the cruelest things, but that's because they're not necessarily fully versed in the consequences of their actions of what's being said. So even though they may have learned something from parents and they might be, you know, 14, 15, 16, which is old enough to understand what you're saying, but it's like that wider and further impact, because initially it's like, oh, well, that's just a joke to me. You know, I'm just fooling around. I'm being an idiot kind of thing. You know, essentially, you know, I'm not saying all kids are idiots.
Yeah.
But as they're at that age, you're still learning and developing and understanding things more widely. So which is probably why it's important as well that maybe like education is... You know, but Milo referenced to it, you know, there's certain states in the US that don't want to teach about things that happened historically, you know, in relation to racism. They want to be talking more about, you know, spinning it onto like the patriotism side and like this is why. And in some respects, that's kind of happened in the UK. You know, when I was brought up, we weren't really taught about racism. We were taught about, you know, which clearly happened, you know, during like the whole, you know, slave trade era, right. You know, the British Empire was essentially built upon, it only has got its economy today, really, because of how it was built, which was literally just going around, you know, getting in a boat and going to another country and not having any regard for anyone that's there and going, right, we're going to take that. We're going to take those resources and we're going to take them back to the UK. And, you know, that is literally, you know, how the UK is established right today.
Should add here, a lot of people don't realize that even though they banned slavery in the UK prior to the US, that didn't stop British companies from going to Africa, loading up boats and cruising over to the US and then selling the people on those boats.
Yeah, it categorically, you know, it was like, oh yeah, this law's been passed, but we're going to just carry on doing what, you know, doing what we want.
That's here in the UK. The US, that's a different country. So
It's incredible, really. Like I say that, you know, that there's a privilege there that I, you know, that you're totally unaware of when you're growing up as a white person. You know that it's there because you can just do anything you want, essentially. And if you happen to be kind of middle class or higher, which is probably a problem that we have class systems, but if you're middle class or higher as a white person, then it's like, yeah, you can do what the hell you want. I mean, even if you're poor and you're essentially very working class, you've still got another step or two up ahead of a lot of people, purely because of the actions, really, historically, of, you know, these lords and sailors that decided to go, right, we're going to take these countries essentially and then claim them as our own, and literally have no regard for anyone that lives there. I know there are other examples across other areas of our species, which wasn't just white British people, or other areas in kind of like Asia and things where you had wars that happened there and people just basically going in that weren't necessarily white people. But I'm just talking about the UK and what its impact on the world today, right from, you know, way back, by influencing a lot of countries to be like, yeah, we essentially, you know, colonized a bunch of countries, just for their own benefit and not for anyone else that actually was native of that country or was there when they arrived. It's like, you know, I mean, and this is the thing I don't get, is like, people that are so kind of like patriotic, there's nothing wrong with patriotism in its simplicity, but the people that are very patriotic with that kind of underbelly of racism attached, you kind of pose the question to them. It's like, okay, so what would you do today if a bunch of people from another country, and it happened to be a different color skin or tone or whatever, but you turned up in boats or aeroplanes or whatever, put a modern spin on it, and then they decided, right, we're taking a hold of this country, we've got no regard for you as a human, that's literally like, oh, we might use you as a utility or whatever, and we're gonna, you know, that's it. No, you can't do anything about it. It's literally, if you want to try and do something about it, you'll die, or you'll get killed. If you're lucky, you'll end up working for that person as a slave in terrible conditions. So if you like I say, if you flip that question back and you ask those people that, I mean, very often they haven't really got an answer for that, because they know that it's a wrong thing. They know that it should never have happened. We can't help what happened in history. And this is the other side of the coin, is that the people who do want to understand and kind of bring about some form of change, people can kind of understand their history. And that's where Milo was talking about the kind of the teaching element, is that whole countries and governments have got to back, you know, the education systems into kind of putting forward the learnings so that younger people can actually, even if they come from a racist household, for example, they can actually be educated via this, you know, schooling system that tells them, you know, this isn't right. And, you know, you could easily turn it and flip it onto, you know, back on, but like flip it back onto yourself and ask yourself, would you want that to happen to you? And I'm pretty certain the answer for most people would sensibly be, no, I would not want that to happen. I certainly would not have wanted anything like that to happen. And no one in a modern era would want anything like that to happen. So does anyone else want to have any input?
No, let's move on. Let's do something fun, Kev.
Okay. Let's lighten it up for a little bit. We've gone on a deep topic for a second. So we're going to bring it back. So every show, Marvin, we have a little segment called Ask an American. And I know you're an American and Milo's an American. Yeah. We've got like an East Coast guy and a West Coast guy. So we've got, it's your chance to ask Milo a totally unscripted question. Ask an American. So
perfect.
Off you go.
Perfect. Okay. So I have one question. So trying to see if I could stump you on this one, but what is the most photographed object in Seattle?
Well, it's got to be the Space Needle. Like, there's nothing else that would be more photographed than that, would there?
Is that your
final answer? Is that not right? Is it one of the? Is it one of the? Is it? Is it the pig? Is it the little
Pike Street Market pig? Doesn't know.
Well, it might not be because the Pike Street Market is also a really popular tourist destination. And so people like to take a picture of the Pike Street Market sign. Right. And there's like a pig underneath there that everybody likes to sit on and then have their picture taken. So that could be it as well. So should I go with the Space Needle or should I go with
a stick or a twist?
The market. God, if I were traveling to Seattle, which would I take a picture of? You know, maybe it is the market. I'm going to go with the market.
Alrighty. Okay, so I don't know where this is, but obviously you're a Seattle native. So, okay, it is a rotating pink elephant car wash sign on Battery Street at Denny Way.
That no longer exists.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they tore it down last year.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
That really surprises me that is the most photographed thing over the market or the Space Needle. Wow.
The Space Needle, yeah.
Yeah.
So they took that down. Okay.
They took it down. So that is, your trivia is outdated. Well, not outdated yet. But,
I know. I was actually looking for it. I saw Jake the elephant too. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was cool too. It was literally a pink elephant for this car wash. Yeah. And it had been there forever and just was this cool relic of old school Seattle. And they took it down. It doesn't exist. I think they're going to put it somewhere. Last I heard, they are going to like put it, I don't know, maybe in a park somewhere, a museum or something like that. But the actual car wash is torn down.
Yeah. Why did they take the elephant down?
I think they're tearing it down and putting a skyrise apartment complex in it, you know, full of condos that nobody can actually afford
the
to
elephant on the top own. And have it rotating on top of the something like that. On top of condos. You know?
It's Amazon's fault. Amazon moved in Seattle and took over everything.
Just wrecked the place.
Okay, so now that we found out that the elephant was the most photographed thing in Seattle, let's move on to a badly drawn bamboo. So, Martin, you have a badly drawn bamboo for us. Let's see.
I do.
I'm really interested in this.
It's pretty small, but simple. I got my inspiration from one of the videos that I was watching. But this is the guy.
Oh, wow.
That's badly drawn.
It's so bad.
I was going to say, it's just like a
stick figure at that point.
Wait, I'll just...
it's like a bust. It's like a bust of bamboo.
I was trying to impersonate the drawings. I tried.
At least you have the beard. That's good. Yeah. Last week's didn't have the beard. So that's all right.
Got the AirPod.
I had no beard in the last one.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, got the ears in.
Nice.
I think you got my beanie on there. So yeah, that's usually a regular. Yeah. No, I'm pretty impressed with that actually. So
yeah, I tried.
Was it a badly? Can I get this right? So hold it up again because I've got to rate these.
Sure, of course. I'll take a screenshot of it. Let me just put this in here.
All right, so let me see if I can get this right because I always get my ratings wrong. Because I actually like that. There's good effort in there. I am going to go for... So it's not that bad, I don't think. So I'm going to rate that as a 3.5
out of
10. Essentially, that's like getting 6.5 if we was rating it good. So yeah, that's
a good rating.
3.5, which probably sits somewhere near the top.
I think that puts it in one of the top badly drawn bamboo category. Actually, yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, the goal is closer to one with Kev's rating system.
Except often I rate it in and I get it totally switched the wrong way around, and I'm like, yeah, I don't even know my own game, you know. So yeah, that's cool, Marvin.
All right, awesome.
All right, so are you going to turn that into an NFT?
Yes, I will. I actually have a good friend.
Are you going to do that?
Yeah, he's going to be able to do it for me. He's going to do it on the XRPO once it goes live with the whole NFT proposal for the ledger. So I'm going to ask him as a favor if he could do that for me.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you hear that, audience? You could own a badly drawn bamboo.
As an NFT as well.
As an NFT. That's cool.
And it'll definitely go to charity. It'll go for a good cause.
Yeah, that's cool.
So,
yeah,
I mean, whether it be a couple of dollars or whatever, you know, it's...
It'd be awesome that we can get the first... Because we've attempted to give away, you know, physical versions of
Badly Drawn Bamboo. People don't want it for free.
People strangely don't want like random images drawn of me. I don't know why.
An NFT would
be great.
Yeah. So say that again, Marvin, where will that potentially be?
So this one, I have to see if I can, cause I can't do it on OpenSea. I'd rather do it on XRPO. I guess when they come out with a platform with the actual proposal on the ledger, it was an XLS 20, I think, you know, you'll be able to get it, but I think you could still do it. It'll just be an IOU and then you'll be able to get it in your wallet. When the proposal comes through.
Who's got that but if tech
you,
and stuff.
I can send it to you guys if you guys want it. I'll just send it to you guys over if you want. I'll mint and I'll just send it to you. If you want the physical, I'll just give you the address. I'll just
awesome. Sign it. Yeah, no, definitely. I'm going to make a montage of all the
perfect. The frame, awesome.
All right.
I can definitely work that in.
If that gets minted, audience, follow Martin at Paper Street Projects on Twitter. You'll see him post about it there, and that's how to track it down. If you have a badly drawn bamboo that you'd like to share with us, you can send it to Kev on @bamboo_creatives on Instagram. And I always say that as @bamboo. So there's no actual A in there. So if anyone just listens to this, they probably are sending stuff to the wrong place. So it's BMBOO_creatives.
We'll stick a graphic up just so that you can see how it's spelled. So yeah. So we've had a little bit of fun. We're going to kind of just drift back into the public survey, and we've got a couple more questions, which I'm going to do that. I'm going to do both questions at the same time, actually, this time. I really loved your drawing, actually. Most of them that come in are pretty good. You was pretty, you know, beforehand you were saying, I'm not a drawer. I'm not an artist. It's got to be poor. And I was expecting a really, really bad one, just so I could actually say, that is a definitive badly drawn bamboo, but it's still a goodly drawn bamboo.
So thank you. I'm
yet to have a 10 out of 10 in the poorly drawn stakes. But yeah, I'm going to bring this back to our public survey. Yeah, so we've got two other questions there, and the final questions that were asked were leading on from the initial one was, should attitudes towards racism change further? And what can all people do to help bring about change? So kind of two very linked questions there. On the should attitudes towards racism change further? Again, we gave them like some multiple choice and then allowed them to clarify if they wanted to. So we had, yes, I think they should. No, I don't think they should. Other, I don't know, and I hope attitudes can change. And I mean, I did expect this. So most of the people that responded in our kind of like 60 odd people, we actually had 64% of people said, yes, I think they should. Attitudes should change. We had a mixed bag of one or two. So we had a fair few people. About 13-14% say, I hope attitudes can change. And then the rest was pretty much made up of an equal run of the no, I don't think they should, other, and I don't know. So I'm going to read a few comments on there. I'm sure, as we did in the first question, we had a varied bunch of responses. So let's have a look. One of the first ones there is, we have and are making great progress on racism. We are the most tolerant country in the world. But unfortunately, I don't know where that person is coming from. I'm going to hazard a guess, either the UK or the US, because most of my followers either are UK or US, but they could have been from somewhere. Maybe could be an Aussie, could be someone in South Africa, possibly. But we'll assume, which is a bad thing to do. Slippery slope to assume. So I'm not going to assume much. No, because I'll get loads of hate mail then. Then another person said, yes, they should, although it is hard to figure out where improvements are needed. We could say at home, but that probably isn't the best place if someone lives in a racist or underground racist. I think they mean kind of like kind of closet racism or whatever, you know, where it's not right. necessarily visible, but it's subtle and particularly harder to identify. Lives in a racist or underground racist family. Maybe education is a good place to start, of course, backed by governments. That's strange because I said something like earlier, with a forward-thinking outlook rather than a regressive one. That's an interesting comment. So kind of like saying that education should be kind of like at the forefront of that change, but that it needs the government to kind of, you know, fully back that. And obviously then, you know, as people learn, get behind it as well. So then someone else, this is an interesting one actually. Someone put, I'm Irish and have suffered racism all my life, particularly in the 1970s when the IRA were bombing the UK. A lot of us know how Muslims feel today. Also, racism isn't just black on white. I think they mean white on black there, which I think, Whoopi Goldberg foul of. The Indian caste system is shocking. The attitude of the Scottish to the English is as well. Once again, these aren't my comments, so
right.
This is just others. And as is the English towards the Polish or other Eastern European countries, it's also West Indians on Indian/Pakistani people. And then you have the momentum towards the Jewish as well. So their kind of rounding comment there is it's everywhere and in all nationalities and races. So they're talking about, you know, the wider impact of racism.
Yeah, yeah. They're talking xenophobia and all that. So it exists. Absolutely.
It's a good for them to highlight the different areas where other examples have happened as well, in, you know, where society has been marginalized by others. Someone says, I think the term needs to be more clearly defined and in line with some consensus beyond how it is defined on social media, which is not always representative as the world as a whole. As it stands, the discussion is monopolized by those whose views fall in line with the vocal majority on social media. So, yeah, I mean, I can agree to that to some degree. It just depends which sides of social media at the time, because obviously you're all going to fall on a certain fence. But
right.
I think it's important that we recognize that social media isn't the only voice, although it is a large voice in today's world. There are a lot of people that have got opinion that, you know, can separate the social media from, you know, just an ongoing opinion or movement or whatever. So that's an interesting one. I'm going to read two or three more because there's a good chunk of responses. Someone said, unfortunately, they will never change. It's genetic, passed down from out of cave-dwelling ancestors.
Okay, I need to comment on that one. That's ridiculous. Okay, yeah. You put a little black child and a little white child in a room and they're going to play together. That is not genetic, all right? Right. That is right. Utterly ridiculous. Racism is taught.
It's an incredible, incredible comment. That's one I don't agree with, and I don't think anyone else here agrees with. although it's serious, it does make you laugh when you kind of read stuff like that, because you just think
that people actually think that.
Yeah. Anyway, I will move on. We will not spend yes. too much on that one. So we've got another one, a good, really, really good comment here, actually, or appears to be. Individuals of all backgrounds need to be respected for who they actually are. Wider racial/ethnic groups need to be celebrated for their distinctive contributions to our shared culture in Britain and abroad. It should be uncontroversial that where the needs of certain groups are not currently being met, the investment is undertaken to increase their opportunities in society. I believe a more public acknowledgement to the deprivations of white sections of society could be very positive, where not presented divisively. School age education would be highly effective, as would committed training in public servants, for example, the police, but also others. I think that was a really, really great comment, actually. I will read one more and I'll bring that back to you guys, and then we'll go on to question three in detail as well. Let's find one more. So someone says, I hope attitudes can change. I really do. The rallying against being woke, whatever that means, seems to be a big thing at the moment. I hope that people striving for equality or calling out injustice isn't seen as a bad thing. I think that was a good one to end that question. So yeah, I'll bounce that back to you guys. Essentially, should attitudes towards racism change further? So yeah, Marvin.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it should be changed. I mean, you know, nobody wants to live in a world where everyone has to be scared of what the other person is going to say, right? I mean, you know, where's the freedom in that, right? You know, that's just something that the whole genetic thing that kind of blew my mind. I can't believe that was just, I'm sorry. I just have to.
I haven't even seen that comment yet as well.
I can't believe someone actually said something like that. Okay. But yeah, definitely should change. And then how can people go about it? You know, just that's another thing, right? Just keeping people accountable, right? But keep people accountable across the board. Don't select a couple of people just because they don't align with your views in other things that doesn't have to do with the topic that you have an issue with, right? So if someone says that, you know, they're for a specific side, you know, don't just kind of nitpick on one, because the thing is, you're sending mixed signals. That's the problem. If you're allowing one person to say something, but not allowing the other person to say something because of some political view or what have you, you're sending mixed signals to the community. You're sending, you know, so, you know, let's eradicate that by keeping it even across the board. I mean, you know, there's certain examples that we had in the past 2 weeks where, you know, there were videos of one person saying a specific word and another person saying the same word. But then one was being more amplified than the other. And, you know, it's just like, well, you know, from someone who is not, let's just say someone who doesn't have the critical thinking skills, they're just like, wait, that doesn't make sense. Like, why, you know, you're kind of pushing some kind of, you know, a narrative for one person. You're kind of looking at that person like, you know, that person's bad. He's a bad actor, evil. But then the other person is just kind of letting it slide. So yes, it should change. I mean, that's a given. And, you know, of course I hope it changes too, because that's something, you know, wishful thinking, right? It's nothing is guaranteed. But also on top of that, just hold accountability even across the board. Don't pick and choose, you know? So that's all I got to say on that, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I am back you up on that. It should. And I agree. It should not be nitpicky as to who you hold accountable to some stuff and who you don't. And you're absolutely right. We see that happen all the time where two people can say the same thing and one will be held liable for it and the other won't. So absolutely. Police force, you know, holding them liable if they, you know, shoot somebody and it's unjustified. No, like, hey, you know, I was a police officer. Somebody was running at me, so I shot them. Teach them to de-escalate the situation without the use of violence, as it should be, as it's done in most countries. Truthfully, right. That's a very US-based problem. So clearly that's something in the US system that allows them to get away with that.
Yeah, there's the kind of shoot first, ask questions later policy.
Yeah. There's no,
doesn't work,
there.
Does it,
they don't get to the ask questions. It's just shoot first and hey, I'm a cop. It's okay.
And I do recognize that from people I know that work in kind of like the armed forces as well, that the military is very similar in that respect as well, like actual communications wise.
Yeah.
And I'm not just like kind of going, oh yeah, America, you're the worst ones at it. But from people that have been in like UK forces, they've always said that the American forces are pretty, you know, pretty poor at trying to get to know a community that they're, you know, if they're posted in, say, you know, Afghanistan or whatever, they've just got no interest in actually communicating with the people that are there. Whereas, like, yeah, and I can only speak for this person that's mentioned it to me. They're saying like the UK forces actually do kind of not necessarily befriend the communities there, but there are normal people living there that, you know, they're not all bad people. I know that's a totally different kind of like edge of the sword, but when it relates to the communication part, you know, if you've got someone who leaves the forces in the US and then they become a police officer, their mindset is still, you know, entrenched in that kind of that process, I suppose. So, yeah, not, you know, the US isn't the only one that's bad at it, but, you know, it does kind of, like Milo said, there seems to be, for some reason, in the police forces, there's,
it's an ingrained systematic issue.
And then nothing else, and then just get basically, you know, get off the, because it was in self-defense, even though someone's running away from you at, like, you know, the fastest the legs can carry them. But, totally. Yeah, we'll put that, we'll go on to the question three, which obviously linked well with the second question there, which is, so what can people do to help bring about change? So there was no options on this one. It was a totally open response. So all feedback there was just, so there was nothing really led there from the options available. So I'm going to bring up some of the comments and let's see what people have got. Let's hope that the person that commented on it being genetic maybe turned down the opportunity to have their own thoughts. That's what I'm always open for free speech, but it's like anything. If you've got an opinion, you have to be open to people responding to that opinion as well, don't you? So here we go then. So someone says, I think as similar to above, education is possibly a main area if supported. If we're older, then self-educating is a great start, like listening to people who have experienced racism and hearing their story. Only then can we really and truly be understanding of someone else's situation. Then following that up by backing those people when you hear racism and or see targeted abuse or targeted racism happening. Okay, so there's someone definitely from the UK that commented that the Black Lives Matter movement, based on incidents thousands of miles away on a different continent, will soon become forgotten as other such online campaigns have. For example, Je suis Charlie, which I think was the French so-called comic called Charlie Hebdo.
Charlie Hezbollah or something like that.
So yeah, where a lot of people, I am Charlie, basically in French, Je suis Charlie. So I think they're getting on the point of that we have these like kind of almost like glamorized things that obviously raise awareness, but also kind of then get quickly forgotten, almost like celebrity culture, I suppose. And they said the kneeling, this is their opinion, not mine. They're putting the kneeling bit before sports games in the UK is cringeworthy and should be abandoned. Okay, they started out with a fairly sensible comment and then kind of just went, I don't know, I'm indifferent to that because without us going down another rabbit hole of answers. For me personally, I just think, well, no one is hurting anyone by doing that, are they? There's not, you know, it's the same as teams shaking hands at the start of a game or whatever, you know.
Right.
If somebody wants to take a knee, let them take a knee. If someone wants to do 10 cartwheels for something else, you know, let them, you know, they're not actually hurting or infringing anyone else's, you know,
right,
personal space. It's just to say we support this in a very quick, you know, a very quick thing. But I kind of did get their initial point about them saying that kind of that sometimes these campaigns will get quickly forgotten. Although their second part was a bit an insensitive comment, I think the first part was relatively sensible in that, you know, some of these campaigns will fade away, unfortunately, just because of there's like this, oh, it's not the in thing or the cool thing, because some people like to treat these things as an accessory rather than actually something that is sustained. Well, let's get a couple more. Some people are scared of being branded racist if they don't immediately fall in line with the perceived consensus. as represented by social media. By that, I mean that people are deterred from discussion if they fear they'll be called racist if they don't instantly agree with all lines of argument presented by, and then they say, for example, supporters of Black Lives Matter. I'll read a couple more because there are some really interesting comments. I don't necessarily agree with all of them, obviously, but some people have taken a good chunk of time to actually put their opinion across there. Let's go with it. So speaking out is important, but is much easier said than done. Raising awareness via social media, protest where necessary, and being peaceful. As mentioned in earlier response, education is the key. There are lessons to be learned in history. It can't be that difficult to get across once everything is stripped away that we are all just human beings. Ultimately, yeah, we are. That is all that matters, isn't it? We're just a species, and for some reason we decide we don't want to get on with each other. So let's go. Someone just put, educate yourself. So these are all like reasons for how people can bring about change. Talking about how it makes people feel, what their world may look like on the receiving end of racism, sends a strong educational message to those that don't care or unaware, uneducated, etc. Think before we speak, thinking the history, think of the general society we live in, we are all able to make small change. And then they say, D&I is a huge part of what I do day to day. It makes me think a lot. It tells a lot about a person who deliberately chooses not to want to learn how to change. So that was a really interesting and balanced comment there. And it isn't the guy from before. Is support genetic studies until it is generally acknowledged that all humans are a single category or single species. And that arbitrarily picking color names to designate races simply trains people to think in a fashion that automatically categorizes people. That's optional, and it should be opted, of course, out of. So yeah, bring that back to you guys, Marvin. Yeah, how do we bring about, or what can all people do to bring about change?
I mean, you know, they for the most part, it's all about awareness and education. I mean that's what I got from the comments. You know, just trying to educate them and really, again, accountability. I mean, you know, that's really what's important here. I mean, if you're just going to allow someone to just say whatever they want, of course, you know, freedom of speech, that's their every right. But I mean, do it within boundaries where you're not hurting someone, you know, emotionally, physically. I mean, you know, as long as you're not hurting or infringing on someone else's rights to, you know, to live the way they want to live. I mean, it should be. You know, it should be so, right? It should be the fact that you just gotta watch what you're saying. And if you're not, you're gonna be held accountable. How? Well, you know, that kind of falls in line with it's a topic, where we're heading into. We're heading into almost like a behavioral economics. I know this is kind of shifting a little bit, but you know, at some point we're going to be surveilled of what we say, right? We're going to be, you know, whether it be through social media, through our phones, anything that involves communications. I mean, we're seeing it now, right? We're all kind of just being looked, and you know, we're being surveilled at that point where our social media is kind of being run through, you know, any kind of content. I mean, you know, you have, you know, Twitter spaces that have closed captions, right? So they know exactly what we're saying. You know, it's kind of, you know, it kind of falls in line with, okay, yeah, you know, maybe we should be educated and being a little bit more, you know, more conscious of what we're saying, which will help being, you know, stop the racism and of course all this negativity. But also, you know, it also kind of brings up the other side too, where it's just like, okay, well, at a certain point, you know, it's going to progress into something where it's just going to be literally every aspect of our lives is going to be surveilled, right? You know, that's going to help bring accountability. That's going to help bring more awareness of what people should and shouldn't say. But then there's a fine line of like, okay, you know, at what point, where can they take it further, right? Can they tweak the algorithms where it's just like, okay, maybe they say something against the government, or maybe they say something against a political view or a certain belief. You know, it's not, I mean, listen, it's of course it's for social justice, and I'm 100% for it, but it's just like, you know, at what, where's the line in the sand where they can just kind of blur it out and say, okay, well, they said something about this political party, you know what I'm saying? And so on and so forth. I think it's just, it's a fine line between that. But again, that's just kind of shifting forward. But for now, I think just being held accountable and kind of, you know, just send a little reminder to people, right? Hey, listen, you know, just be careful, you know, what you're saying and stuff like that. Because at a certain point, you know, that's just going to be all done automatically. It's just going to be automated. And yeah, that's going to help. It's definitely going to help. And, you know, education, right? And, you know, Milo brought up a good point, right? It starts off with, it's generational, right? So, I mean, if we can't do it with our generation, because clearly you could see that, you know, let's try to make sure we mold the generation moving forward, or the generations moving forward, you know, to kind of help mitigate this kind of, this attitude, or this kind of, these, you know, these thoughts, right? These kind of, you know, just the kind of negativity that people put in their heads. So again, you know, moving forward, I mean, we could try to do as much as we can, but try to help mitigate all that. I think, you know, it starts with the, you know, the younger generations. So I think that's already starting. We just would have to reinforce that.
Yep, absolutely. Keep it moving in the right direction, and education and holding people liable. It's an interesting, I just really want to comment on what you mentioned about like people tracking what you're saying and that kind of stuff, because it's totally true where, you know, that happens, and you can be held liable for, we've seen it, something you tweeted like 10 years ago. I was listening to an interview with the former head of the ACLU, and he was talking about that because they're all about free speech, whether you agree with it or not, right? And he was asked about like people that they've defended. And he said a large majority of the time, the people we've defended, we haven't agreed with. Like, you know, they've defended white supremacists that they clearly don't agree with their opinions, but they agree with their right to say what they think. And it is an interesting aspect of culture now where you are being held liable for saying something.
Yeah, for sure. I think touching on that very small, because I think we, like you talking about people getting in trouble for things that they've said historically. Yeah, I was just going to kind of not really bring up an example of that, but it is I think we do, and I think you also mentioned it a little bit earlier on, Marvin, where it's like, yeah, okay, you know, people can make mistakes and, you know, they can say something wrong. And I think obviously it's important that they learn from something. If they say something that, regardless of what that is, but obviously in relation to this topic, if they say something racist and they then don't learn from it and it continues, of course, yeah, they're not necessarily, like Milo said, if someone says something racist one day, you're not going to wake up the next day and necessarily change their behavior. But if someone says something that's a genuine mistake, or it's like a faux pas kind of thing, we live as well in a society where we're not allowing people the chance to apologize sometimes as well. You know, like especially in the whole kind of social media, and we know what Twitter is like for taking off. Somebody says something, and yeah, they say something wrong, and absolutely, you know, totally wrong, shouldn't have said it. But when do they get a chance to say, okay, you know, I genuinely apologize for that? Because everyone's then kind of like cancelled that person, or career's over, or whatever. Doesn't necessarily mean that they shouldn't be punished for what they've said, but should. You know, people should be allowed to kind of also apologize and learn, because if you don't allow them, all you do, you kind of create that division even further, I think.
Right.
Because if you don't give the opportunity for someone to say, if the pattern continues, clearly, yeah, they're not going to change. But we have to allow people the initial in anything as well. This is, you know, if I go on Twitter and say something tomorrow and it offends someone, okay, it's offended somebody. Am I going to, you know, go and like harass them tomorrow and say something again to them, you know, right? Are they going to be over it kind of the next day and be like, okay, as long as I've learned from that moment that I've said something? If I don't and I continue to, you know, repeat those things, then yeah, sure, you know, prosecute me, punish me with what I've done. But we have to allow someone to make an apology, public or privately, you know, to the people that it may have impacted and affected. And only that way you can also kind of grow from there as well, I believe. And I'll be like on my.
All right, let's bring it down a notch. Marvin, we've chatted about the Badly Drawn Bamboo NFT that is going to be your most prized possession. But until that happens, currently, what if you just had one item that you could keep, one possession in the world with you, what would that one item be?
Glad you asked. So I was all day, I was just thinking, I'm like, oh, if I just, you know, if I had to just bring one item with me, what would it be? And I couldn't come up with an answer. But so on my chair, a screw fell off, right? And literally this was like right before coming on. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. I was like, I don't have a screw. I don't have anything. And I'm just like, okay, now I have my item. It would be a Swiss Army knife. And I know that's call. Cheating. I know that's kind of cheating a little bit.
Yeah, because you got 30 things in
right,
there.
Right. And I know that's kind of cheating, but I mean, you literally can survive with just mini scissors, mini pliers. I mean, you can have 30 in one, and I know that's kind of cheating a little bit, but I'm literally just putting the screw back on. And I'm just like, you know, I really wish I had something small I could just put in my pocket and just kind of bring with me at all times. And I'm just like, I got my answer, Swiss Army knife. So I would bring a Swiss Army knife with me. That would be my one item. That would be it right there.
MacGyver has taught us that is the most important item that any person could carry on them. I mean, you could use it to disarm bombs, to fix stuff. It's it's universally amazing.
And I think was it Crocodile Dundee who had a knife, you know? So, I mean, you know, he just had a knife, but
yeah.
I thought he was going to say like, your nano ledger or whatever with all your assets kind of loaded on and just like, yeah, okay, I've got this, I'm off.
Right. So, and it depends on the situation too, yeah. Right? If you told me that I'd be like living on an island or, you know, like a really intense situation like that, then, you know, a nano wouldn't get me anything, right? I mean, my wealth would be measured in what I, you know, in whatever goods I can produce, you know, and at that point, if I have $1 million and whatever, you know, it's not really going to help me. So, but yes, that would be my one thing for sure, Swiss Army knife.
It's totally blown everyone else's answers out of the water now, because they've all just said like one thing, you know, like soccer ball or pen or a mattress or whatever. And it's like, there you go. I'm going to take with me like a full toolbox with everything. Toolbox. It's just one thing. So, but no, cracking answer. I love it almost as much as I love cheese. And on this show, we also have another question for you, which is, talking of cheese, Marvin, is what is your favorite cheese? It's our most important question on Rip It Up. So yeah, what is one of your favorite cheeses?
Munster cheese.
Yeah, I do not know what Munster cheese is.
Oh really?
Milo, do you know what Munster cheese is?
Do they not have Munster in the UK?
I don't know. I don't think so. Have you bought it? Have you managed
I know
to
Munster.
It?
Yeah.
Have you got it in the UK?
Feel like I have, because it's soft, right? It's like very strong. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can find it in there's a market in central London that you can get different cheeses at. I think you can get it there. I'm not a fan of Munster, but my wife is. She likes the like stinky strong cheeses, so she is definitely a fan of that one.
And it's really, really stretchy when it melts, so it kind of has like almost like a mozzarella kind of like you know, like texture, I guess, when it's heated up.
Is it kind of a bit like brie as well then? So it's
kind of
that kind of melty, stringy, kind of gooey
texture. Maybe, but the taste is very different, I would say.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Definitely. I'm not a big fan of brie. I'll definitely say that.
Yeah. So what's the taste like? What's Munster? Because this is like just opened my eye. I'd never heard of it before in my life. So
it almost has like a salty taste to it. Almost like a savory taste to it. It doesn't really have much of a taste. What do you think, Milo?
I'm trying to think how I would describe it as well. Like, yeah, it's very kind of on the back of your tongue, kind of strong taste.
Right.
Is the way, right, yeah, you right. know. That's the way I would think of it. Okay. So, all right, geez, let's wrap this show up, guys. Before we finish out, of course, Marvin, if people want to track you down, where would they find you? Social media, web, whatever. What do you want to plug? Okay.
Awesome. So on Twitter, it's Paper ST Projects. That's pretty much my name throughout most of my social media. And you can find me a lot on Clubhouse. Same name, Paper ST Projects. I do two shows a week. We'll have two other co-hosts. And then we talk about, you know, financial literacy, crypto literacy, and, you know, anything in between. So, yeah, those are the two main platforms you'll find me on.
All right. Great.
Cool. And what about any kind of like in-person stuff? Do you do any kind of meet? Because you spoke about meetups.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Thank you for that. Thank you for reminding me. So we do XRP NYC meetups. We have it every 2 months. This one coming should be at some point in March going into April, but I'll be retweeting that out as much as I could. Come on out. You know, we have food and drinks. We do serve, and we kind of just go over, you know, all the latest things happening on the XRP ledger, and then anything in between. You know, anybody want to have conversations, you know, any conversations, any topics they want to go over. So it's kind of cool. It's fun. It's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to get myself out to one. I'm sure people run similar things in the UK, but I don't know why the US ones just always seem so much like so much more effort put into them, and like just seem like everyone's like really, really invested in one. I've definitely got to get myself. When Milo flies back to like Seattle, I'm gonna have to like jump in his suitcase or something and just
drop me some off. Cheese.
Buy some cheese. Drop me off in NYC, and then
take you to the Pike Place Market, and you can hit the cheese stands.
Yeah, I can take a photo of the original location of where the Pink Elephant was. But it's no.
Yeah, there you go.
Just be like, this is where it was. So, yeah. Right. Tour of the northern states of the US. I know that's awesome. So yeah, thanks Marvin for joining us. As always, thanks to the public for their comments and input, and obviously anyone that's kind of been listening on Instagram Live to our unedited stream. Thanking everyone for helping us to rip it up again.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
No, that's awesome. Thanks, Marvin. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Hey, Kev, what's coming up next on Rip It Up?
Yeah, Milo, next time on Rip It Up, we've got Rod Matsui's coming back, and he's going to do a deep dive show with us. So we're going to go and talk Loch Ness Monsters, Sasquatches, Bigfoots, more of the films that he's been involved in. I'm sure it's going to be an absolute fantastic show. The original one was, and Rod's a great guy. I'm sure we'll find out much more about him as well.
Nice. That sounds super interesting. Looking forward to it. Anything else?
Yeah. So this episode has actually been sponsored by Better World Brewing, and they have actually given us some beers to give away, as well as donating some trees via One Tree Planted and Ecology. So viewers, keep your eyes on social media for more about how to win some beer. We'll be posing a question to the public to answer, and to win some beer and help with plummet.
All right. And that'll be on Bamboo_Creatives.
Yeah. So keep your eyes on our social media.